Well, very much appreciated Mr. Johnson's message last Sabbath. It was kind of an extension of the messages we received during the Spring Holy Days. Or maybe I should say, you know, it was a continuation of the sermons that we received during the Spring Holy Days. I always think this is a time period right after the Spring Holy Days and then leading up to the Feast of Pentecost. And it's a good time to reflect on the journey of the children of Israel. I know often I've read and do, and probably some of you read through some of those stories that are in the Pentateuch and in the first five books of the Bible. Read through some of those stories that are reflection of and part of the journey of the children of Israel. We do take time before the spring feasts to prepare, to reflect on, to evaluate, to examine, to judge ourselves, as it says in 1 Corinthians 11. And part of that invariably includes the journey of the children of Israel before the Exodus and then through the Exodus. Of course, as we begin that journey in Genesis, really, and it kind of increases a little bit in its intensity as we get into the book of Exodus. But there are many lessons to be learned post-Exodus as well. Many lessons that we all can learn from the journey of the children of Israel. Let's turn into Deuteronomy. We'll begin there today, the book of Deuteronomy, and talk a little bit about this journey of the children of Israel. Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 2. Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 2 says, "And it is 11 days' journey from Horeb by the way of Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea." 11 days' journey. And as Dr. Levy says in his FI class on the book of Deuteronomy, 11 days became 40 years. Think about the logistics of that for a moment. 11 days became 40 years of moving around. And we know the reasons for that. They murmured and they didn't please God. And so those people who were, I think, as I recall, I'm just thinking of this, 20 years and up, as I recall, were not able to enter the promised land. They died off in the wilderness before the children of Israel entered. So 11 days journey really became 40 years in the wilderness. Verse 19 of chapter 1 says, "So we departed from Horeb and went through all that great and terrible wilderness which you saw on the way to the mountains of the Amorites." So it's the journey here described as a great and terrible wilderness. And if we were to read through, you know, from about Exodus, the post-Exodus journey that starts in about Exodus chapter 14 after the crossing of the Red Sea, and we read there through the Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy kind of rehashes a lot of that and Moses, you know, re-talks about some of that and refreshes those people who are preparing to go into the promised land. We can read through those chapters and read through the story of what happened to the children of Israel on that 40-year journey. There are a lot of lessons, as we said. We read the story from beginning to end, and sometimes, you know, we think Well, you know, we have that story in front of us, and there's not, when you consider that it's 40 years, there's not a huge amount of detail, but enough that we get the story. And we can read that and read through that and see that, you know, what happened, and we know what happened to them before the Exodus and all the miracles that were performed to have them come out of rigorous bondage. And we can see that what they went through. And sometimes we think, well, you know, we wouldn't have murmured or we wouldn't have complained because, you know, after God performed those tremendous miracles. But the answer to your question is, yes, we would have. Yes, we would have. You know, we're complaining about how cold and damp it is, right? We complain about that, don't we? And you know what? In July, we'll be complaining it's too hot. It's just what we do. It's kind of what we do, don't we? And we would do some of these same things that the children of Israel did. We would complain and murmur like they did, wouldn't we? I'm sure I would, and I'm sure we all would. We were over in Israel in 2019 with the Foundation Institute extended trip, where we were over there for 7 or 8 days, and it's a wonderful trip. One of the probably wonderful best trips I've ever taken anywhere. It was very educational. It was just interesting to see some of the things that, you know, have gone on for thousands of years. You know, in this country, if it's a couple hundred years old, it's old. In Israel and some of the European countries, you know, if it's only 2,000 years old, it's barely broke in. And so we enjoyed that trip, and one of our days we were down in the Jericho area, and down in, I think that's east of Jerusalem. Am I right on that? I think it is. And the Roops have been there as well, the Ruchmans, but some others of you may have been there in the past as well. But we were out in Qumran, I think it's called. It was called. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. And it was blazing hot. You know, and when it's 110 degrees, I don't care how dry the air is. When that sun is beaming down on you and it's 110 degrees, it's hot. And it was hot. And I remember we had some folks on our trip that were from South Africa. And they had come over early before the group came and the tour started. And they spent some time in southern Israel by the Red Sea. And they actually, as I recall, they actually went snorkeling in the Red Sea before the tour. And it was interesting, but I remember one of them being on the In Accord after, talking about the fact that when you go down there and you see the desolation, and it's hot, it helps you to kind of understand why they might have complained and murmured a little bit and when they were there for 40 years. So we have a lot of lessons that we can learn and should learn from the journey of the children of Israel. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. I'm going to have to drink a little bit of this because my throat's already getting a little bit hoarse, I can tell. So 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 11. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 11. And all of us, or most of us, I'm sure, remember Mr. Wetson. And he died, of course, now about 11 or 12 years ago. But I remember him emphasizing this several times, frequently, that he would emphasize this particular principle. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 11 says, "Now all these things happened to them." Happened to them. The them, we can go back to verse 1, says, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea." That's the them that Paul was referring to here. All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. If we drop down to verse 6, it says, "Now all these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted." Verse 11 again says, "Now all of these things happened to them," the Israelites, the children of Israel, "as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come." So Paul emphasized here the fact that these are examples, that there are lessons for us to learn. Lessons for us to learn. Today, I want to look at and consider some lessons we can draw from the end of the journey. We can draw some lessons from. When I say the end of the journey, you know, Mr. Andruski in the sermonette certainly mentioned some things that were after the period of time, the Uzzah incident, and so those were after the period of time that I'll be talking about today. When I say the end of the journey, I'm talking really about the end of the 40-year journey. A couple of lessons. We could take our Bible and draw hundreds and probably thousands of lessons from the journeys of the children of Israel as we look through, you know, the Exodus through Deuteronomy and on into some of the events and lessons of the children of Israel. Even maybe to this day, we could draw and learn lessons from it. But so when I say the end, I'm talking about the end of the 40-year journey. We'll draw some lessons between the approach of taking Jericho and taking AI, or as it's pronounced really, I think from what I've heard, I. It's spelled AI, but it's I. Some lessons from the approach of those two events, of the taking of Jericho and the taking of AI. Let's turn back to Joshua. We'll go back and kind of read through that story. What I'm going to do is read through that story from the New American Standard Bible. We'll cover some highlight verses in the story. If we go back to Joshua, the first chapter, and we'll read through some of these events just as they were coming and beginning to take over, coming into the land of Canaan and taking over and coming into the promised land. Joshua chapter 1, and we'll read beginning in verse 1 through verse 9. Again, I'm reading from the New American Standard Version. It says, "Now it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, that the Lord spoke to Moses, to Joshua rather, the son of Nun, Moses' servant." So this is Joshua now, Moses' servant. "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore," so this was after Moses had died, I think that is explained in chapter 34 of the book of Deuteronomy, just before Joshua. "Moses, my servant," verse 2, "is dead. Now therefore arise, cross this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, to the children of Israel," or to the the New American Standard, and so if I read it this way, it refers to the children of Israel. It references them as the sons of Israel. Every place, verse 3, on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given to you, just as I spoke to Moses, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, even as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, as far as the great sea, toward the setting of the sun, will be your territory. A vast area in Israel. No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. So God promises that they can, that they'll be able to do this. Just as I've been with Moses, I will be with you, Joshua. I will not fail you or forsake you. Or as the King James says, I will never leave you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, verse 6, for you shall give this people possession of the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and courageous, or be strong and of good courage, as the New King James says. Be careful to do according to the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. So there's emphasis here in several places as we go through this story on being careful to do what you're told. Be careful to do what I command you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, so that you may have success wherever you go. It's verse 7. Verse 8 says, this book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. And then you will make your way prosperous. Very important lesson there itself. It's not one of the lessons that I have, but as I said, there are many, many lessons in the story of the journey of the children of Israel. And it says, so you will make your way prosperous, and then you shall have success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. So very important to process that, to think about that, and it had to be very encouraging to Joshua, because think about, you know, taking over in a human, as a human being, not in a human position necessarily as God's servant, but you're taking over for Moses. And it had to be very encouraging for Joshua here. Drop down now to chapter 2 as we continue the story. We'll just cover some of the highlights here. It says, then Joshua, the son of Nun, sent two men as spies secretly from Shittim, saying, go view the land, especially Jericho. So they went and came to the house of a harlot whose name was Rahab and lodged there. So, you know, we think of Rahab, don't we? We think of it as Rahab the harlot, or the harlot Rahab. How would you like to have, you know, that attached to your name? And yet, harlot Rahab is found among those of faith in the book of Hebrews chapter 11. Rahab is found there as a woman of faith. Rahab the harlot in Hebrew can mean innkeeper, or it can mean lady of the night. But in the Greek, you know, in Hebrews chapter 11, it only means harlot. It only means harlot. So we see here that there were spies and that Rahab the harlot's dropped down to verse 10. Verse 10 says, "For now we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea." Now this is Rahab the harlot talking to the spies. It says, "For now we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt." So this was a 40-year-old event that was still there, even among the Canaanites, that they have heard this from 40 years ago. Sometimes that happens. I know that we have an event in our family that is talked about sometimes that happened 50 years ago, and yet people remember, some of us old timers. So you know, they remembered this, and this must have been, you know, well known that the Red Sea dried up, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan of Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. Verse 11 says, "When we heard it, our hearts melted, and no courage remained in any man any longer because of you." So this is quite a statement to make here, that the Canaanites' hearts melted, that they recognized, you know, the power of this. Verse 12 through 14 says, "Now therefore, please swear to me by the Lord, since I kindly dealt with you." So we know the story of Rahab, and we can pick up that story at another time if you don't, or if you needed a refresher. But they dealt kindly with you. She dealt kindly with these spies, that you will also deal kindly with my father's household and give me a pledge of truth and spare my father, my mother, my brothers, and my sisters with all who belong to them and deliver our lives from death. So the men said to her, "Our life for yours. If you do not tell this business of ours, it shall come about when the Lord gives us the land, that we will deal kindly and faithfully with you." So they made that commitment. Verse 15 says, "So when she let down by the rope through the window, for her house was on the wall, on the city wall, on the city of Jericho, on the wall, so that she was living on the wall. She said to them, 'Go to the hill country so that the pursuers will not happen upon you, and hide yourselves from them for 3 days until the pursuers return. Then afterward, go your way.'" So she gave them very good advice there, to go hide for a few days until the, and if we read through the whole story, I don't have time, I won't take the time to read every chapter, every verse. But if we did, we would see that she hid them and then helped and gave them good advice so that they could get back to the children of Israel, that these spies could get back to the children of Israel. Verse 23 says, "Then the two men returned and came down from the hill country and crossed over and came to Joshua the son of Nun, and they related to him all that had happened. Then they said to Joshua, 'Surely the Lord has given all the land into your hands. Moreover, all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before us.'" So they got a good report here, quite different than the one that, you know, than the original report from Joshua and Caleb when they went out to spy the land. Chapter 3, verse 1, we see some crossing instructions. Some crossing of the Jordan instructions that Joshua gave in verses 1 through 4. You can read those yourself at some point. Verse 5 says, "Then Joshua said to the people, 'Consecrate yourself, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you.'" So we see that there are going to be some amazing things that happen here. in, you can, again, you can read through verse 11 on that and read that yourself. Verse 12, drop down to verse 12, says, "Now then, take for yourselves 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one man for each tribe, and it shall come about when the soles of your feet of the priests who carry the ark of the Lord of all the earth." So a couple of things to think about here. One is that the priests here led the way. The priests here led the way. And it also said it's not the Lord of just, and this really is a reference to Jesus Christ, but it's not just the Lord of the children of Israel, but the Lord of the God of all the earth. So it says it shall be come about when the soles of your feet, of the feet of the priests who carry the ark of the Lord of the earth, rest in the waters of the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan will be cut off, and the waters which are flowing down from above will stand one heap. So when the people, verse 14, set out their tents to cross the Jordan with the priests carrying the ark of the covenant before the people, verse 15 and 16, verse 15 says, "And when those who carried the ark came into the Jordan, and the feet of the priests carrying the ark were dipped on the edge of the water, for the water overflows all its banks all days of harvest, the water which flowing down from above stood and rose up in one heap a great distance away at Adam, the city beside Zarethan, and those which were flowing down toward the Sea of Arabah, the Salt Sea, were completely cut off. So the people crossed opposite the Jericho," verse 17, "and the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground." Again, another tremendous miracle done here, wasn't it? Another tremendous miracle. So we continue the story. We'll turn over to chapter 5. We'll skip chapter 4 for now. Again, this is a story that I know many of us have read many times, are familiar with, and would encourage us to read it again in light of the lessons that we talk about and think about. Joshua chapter 5, interestingly, verse 11 says, "On the day after the Passover," so they observed the Passover. It says, "On the day after the Passover," and we could, again, go into that. It's part of the story flow as you read this. "But on the day after the Passover, on that very day," so the day after the Passover would be the first day of unleavened bread, "they ate some produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. And the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten some of the produce of the land." So now they began, rather than getting the daily manna, they began to live off the produce of the land. Drop down to verse 13. It says, "Now it came about when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, 'Are you for us or for our adversaries?'" Verse 14, "He said, 'No.'" Now that's an interesting answer when you think about it. Sometimes, with the political environs and the world environs that we're in, we're asked questions. It's an interesting response here. Again, it was really Jesus Christ here responding. But he didn't say, "Well, I'm for you or for your adversaries," because the question was, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" And he said, "No." Rather, indeed, verse 14, "Come now as captain, I indeed rather come now as captain of the host of the Lord." And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and bowed down and said to him, "What has my Lord to say to his servant?" And the captain of the Lord of hosts said to Joshua, "Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy." And Joshua did so. So that was an interesting response, wasn't it? So then we drop down now to Joshua chapter 6, and picking up the story, Joshua chapter 6 says, "Now Jericho was tightly shut." Tightly shut meaning it was shut over, shut off, a wall all around it. It was shut off because of the children of Israel. No one went out and no one came in. And the Lord said to Joshua, verse 2, "See, I have given you Jericho into your hand with its king and its valiant warriors." So, here are some instructions for you. Here are some instructions for you. "You shall march around the city, all the men of war circling the city once. You shall do so for 6 days. Also, 7 priests shall carry 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. Then on the 7th day, you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. And it shall be that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city will fall down flat, and the people will go up, every man straight ahead." So Joshua, the son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant, and let 7 priests carry 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord." Verse 7, "Then he said to the people, go forward." Forget what the New King James doesn't say forward, it says press on or something here. But it says, "Then he said to the people, go forward and march around the city, and let the armed men go on before the Ark of the Lord." And so it was when Joshua had spoken to the people, and 7 priests carrying the 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord went forward and blew the trumpets, and the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord followed them, and the armed men went before the priests who blew the trumpet. Verse 9, "And the rear guard came after the Ark while they continued to blow the trumpets. But Joshua commanded the people, saying, you shall not shout, nor let your voice be heard, nor let a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I tell you, shout. Then you shall shout." So he had the Ark of the Covenant taken around the city, circling it once. Then it came into the camp and spent the night in the camp. Now Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priests took up the Ark of the Lord. Verse 13, the 7 priests carrying the 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord went on continually and blew the trumpets. And the armed men went before them, and the rear guard came after the Ark of the Lord while they continued to blow the trumpets. And the 2nd day they marched around the city once and returned to the camp, and they did so for 6 days. So just as they were instructed to do. It's important for us to grasp and get that concept that they really did exactly what they were asked to do. And you know, as they were told, you know, don't deviate to the right or to the left. Verse 15, "Then on the 7th day they rose early at the dawning of the day and marched around the city in the same manner 7 times. Only on that day they marched around the city 7 times. At the 7th time, when the priests blew the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. The city shall be under the ban, or I think in the New King James it says the accursed things. The city shall be under the ban. It and all that it belong, that is in it, belongs to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot and all who are with her in the house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent. But as for you, only keep yourselves from the things under the ban. Under the ban. Or as again it says in the New King James, from the accursed things. It becomes important as we enter the next part of the story, as again we're familiar. So that you do not covet them and take some of the things under the ban, or under the, that are some of the accursed things, and make the camp of Israel accursed and bring trouble to it. Again, not a part of our lesson necessarily, but a very important point here. Sometimes some of the things we do can certainly affect others. Verse 19 says, "But all the silver and gold and articles of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord. They shall go into the treasury of the Lord." So the people shouted, and the priests blew the trumpets. And when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, the people shouted with a great shout, and the wall fell down flat. So that the people went into the city, every man straight ahead, and they took the city. And again, this is not a new story to us. We've heard and read this story before, so it's not a new story to us, is it? That the wall fell down. Now, there's some thought, could have been an earthquake or something that caused the wall. But we know that God caused the wall to fall down. Verse 21 says, "They utterly destroyed everything in the city, both man and woman, young and old, and ox and sheep and donkey, with the edge of the sword." So we see here that there's great emphasis on doing and following exact instructions, isn't there? Following exact and recognizing, you know, God being the one, and then following God's instructions. Now let's drop down and look and a lot more briefly at the story of Ai, or I. Let's drop down to chapter 7 and verse 1. Chapter 7 and verse 1. Because here we see a different story. We see a different story. Says, "But the children of Israel acted unfaithfully in regards to the accursed things," or as the New American Standard Bible says, "things under the ban," that were banned. "For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Gadbi, the son of Zerah, from the tribe of Judah, took some of the things under the ban," or took some of the accursed things. "Therefore the anger of the Lord burned against the children of Israel," again, because of one man taking something or doing something that he should not have done. There's a tremendous lesson. Again, it's not one of the lessons that I specifically have marked down, but it is a lesson that we can draw from this. So verse 2 says, "Now Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai," which is near Bethaven, east of Bethel or Bethel. I learned that when I was in Israel, that there are a lot of B-E-T-H in Israel, and it's really pronounced Bet, B-E-T-H. So Bethaven or Bethel, "and said to them, 'Go up and spy out the land.' So the men went up and spied out Ai," or Ai. "And then they returned to Joshua and said to him, 'Do not let all the people go up. Only about 200 or 300 men need to go up to Ai. Do not make all the people toil up there, for they are few. Quite a different, really, when we look at this now, as we read through this, look at the difference in attitude here versus what we saw at Jericho. So about 300 men from the people went up there, but they fled from the men of Ai, and the men of Ai struck down 36 of their men and pursued them from the gate as far as Shebarim and struck them down on the descent so that the hearts of the people melted and became like water. Like we would say, like butter on a warm day, on a warm sunny day. Melted. Then Joshua tore his clothes and fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord until the evening, both he and the elders of Israel. They put dust on their heads. Joshua said, "Alas, O Lord, why did you ever bring this people over the Jordan only to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us?" Again, a very different story here, isn't there? Very different story. You know, in Jericho, in the example of Jericho, we saw a people that was triumphant, and they knew that it was God that delivered it and gave it to them. And here they're saying, why did you bring us over here to have us destroyed? Verse 7 says, only to deliver us to the hand of the Amorites to destroy us, if only we had been willing to dwell beyond the Jordan. Again, a very different attitude. O Lord, what can I say since Israel has turned their back before their enemies? For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it, and they will surround us and cut off our name before the earth. And what will you do for your great name? So we see again quite a different story. Now we know and we can see, we'll read through that story very quickly. Pardon me. Try and get this out of my throat. Verse 10 says, of chapter 7, says, "So the Lord said to Joshua, rise up." Get up. "Why is it that you have fallen on your face? Israel has sinned and have also transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them, and they have even taken some of the things under the ban," or the accursed things, "and the ban, and have both stolen and deceived. Moreover, they have also put them among their own things." Have also put them among their own things. And so we can read the story here, read through this of how Joshua dealt with this and how he brought Achan to admit what he did and how he took care of that. And then after that was taken care of, we can see over in chapter 8, and verse 1, chapter 8 and verse 1. Now we're back on track here. After God had inspired and helped Joshua take care of the issue, we get back on track. And then in verse 11 says, "Now the Lord said to Joshua, do not fear or be dismayed. Take all the people of war with you. Arise and go up to Ai. See, I have given into your hand the king of Ai, his people, his city, and his land." So we see initially anyway, two very different stories here. From the stories of Jericho and the story of Ai. So let's look at some lessons and go back and revisit a little bit of this. I'm going to come back now and take away the storybook, so to speak, and come back to the New King James Version of the Bible. Joshua chapter 5. Let's look at some lessons that we can law or we can draw. I have three specific lessons. Like I said, there are hundreds of lessons that we could draw from the children of Israel coming out of Egypt and after the post, after they were out of Egypt and through the years really that followed. First lesson I have is this. Understanding the plan or the battle plan starts with taking off your shoes. Let's turn to Joshua chapter 5. Joshua chapter 5. We read through this and a little bit over it. But Joshua chapter 5, and we'll read verse 13 through 15 again. It says, it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man a man stood opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, are you for us or for our adversaries? We discussed that. So he said, no. But as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, what does my Lord say to his servant? Then the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, take off your sandals off your foot. It's one of the lessons that we can learn as we read through the story of the children of Israel and the story here of Jericho and Ai, is it starts with taking off your shoes. It's a sign of humility and respect. It's a sign of humility and respect. And as we fight our battles, as we learn these lessons, one of the lessons that we poignantly learn is that we need to have reverence and respect, and we need to approach or come before God with deep humility and proper godly fear and respect, don't we? We need to come to before God with deep humility. And that's one of the things here that we learn from this story of Jericho and Joshua being led by God to overtake it. Jeremiah, we'll look at some other scriptures. You might want to put something here because we'll come back to the book of Joshua several times. But we'll look at some other scriptures as well. Jeremiah chapter 10. Jeremiah chapter 10. And just recognize these things. Jeremiah chapter 10. We'll look first of all at verse 13. Verse 13 says, when he utters his voice, there is a multitude of waters in the heavens, and he causes the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He makes lightning for rain. He brings wind out of his treasuries. That was an interesting scripture. It is God. I'm not going to turn there, but in relationship to this, you can read Isaiah chapter 40. that talks about the power of God. It is God who ultimately takes care of, as we drop down here to verse 23 of Jeremiah chapter 10, to that we know and understand that it is God that ultimately takes care of us. It is God who we can ultimately lay our issues and anything that we have at His feet. It is God that cares for us, as it says in 1 Peter. Verse 23 says, O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. We need to come to that realization as we learn these lessons from the children of Israel. And if you look at the story there in Jericho, we can see that what happened in no way could have happened unless God made it happen. And many times in our lives, we can have the same things. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5 through 8. Again, just to reinforce this lesson that we need to take our shoes off, that we need to approach the throne of God in reverence, in respect, in fear, in godly fear, and in humility. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He shall direct your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It will be health, verse 8, to your flesh, and strength to your bones. Sometimes we don't know what to do or how to remove a particular fault or get something, you know, that is troubling us out of our way. You know, ask Him, ask God to show us His plan in helping us overcome. God will help us to do those things, to overcome, to get past any obstacles that Satan throws in our way. Let's go back to Joshua chapter 6. Joshua chapter 6 and verse 1. Joshua chapter 6 and verse 1 says this. Says, now Jericho was securely shut up or closed off or closed around because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. They simply did, as we go through this, as we read through this story, when they marched around the city, they simply did what they were told. Sometimes that's not as simple as standing here and saying it, but we need to do our best to do what we're told, don't we? To do our best. And we do our best to do what we're told. Lesson number two I have for us today. Lesson number two. Jericho was not defeated by human wisdom. Jericho was not defeated by human wisdom. Let's drop down to chapter 6 and verse 6. Read through this again a little bit. We'll read through a couple of verses here. Jericho was not defeated by human wisdom. It says, then Joshua, the son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, take up the Ark of the Covenant, let the seven priests bear seven trumpets of rams, horns before the Ark. And the people, and he said to the people, proceed and march around the city, and let him who is armed advance before the Ark of the Lord. So it was. When Joshua had spoken to the people that the seven priests bearing the seven trumpet ram's horns before the Lord advanced and blew the trumpets, and the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord followed. Now again, this would not be probably what any of us would design, what any general would design in war today, would he, to go around the city. It's not human wisdom here, is it? Verse 9 says, the armed men went before the priests, they blew the trumpets, and the rear guard came after the ark, while the priests continued blowing the trumpets. Now Joshua had commanded the people, saying, you shall not shout or make any noise with your voice, nor shall a word proceed out of your mouth, until the day I say to you, shout. Then you shall shout. Let's drop down to verse 16. It says, on the seventh time it happened, the priests blew the trumpet, that Joshua said to the people, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. Now the city shall be doomed by the Lord to destruction, but it's doomed by the Lord. Not by human wisdom, but by the Lord. You know, are we willing to search out God's word for what he says we are to do and to overcome? Or do we want to impose our own wisdom? Are we willing to give ourselves over, as it says in Psalm 31, to be led by and guided by God? Are we willing to do that? As the example here is of the children of Israel, you know, encircling Jericho. Point number three, you know, are we willing to take the drastic steps, I might ask that question, that we need to? Point number three, the victory requires us, but belongs to God. Pardon me. The victory requires us, but belongs to God. Verse 20 here says, so the people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets, and it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat. Again, not human reasoning. And it was God that made this happen, wasn't it? You know, we, brethren, you and I, are powerless before God, aren't we? We're powerless before God. So we need, or without God, I should say, we're powerless without God. We need God to be in charge of every facet of our lives. We're powerless without him. And the victory then, it requires us, doesn't it? We have to be involved, but the victory belongs to God, doesn't it? 1 Corinthians, let's look at a couple of other scriptures. We'll get away again. We'll be back to the book of Joshua in a moment. Let's look at a couple of other scriptures in regards to this. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, back to the New Testament. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 26, we'll read through 31. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26 says, for you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh. And we read this, and this is not to denigrate us, but we know that the victory belongs to God, doesn't it? Not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. And the base things of the world and the things which are despised, God has chosen, and the things which are not, to bring to nothing the things that are. God is in charge, and God will take care of these things. Verse 29 says that no flesh should glory in his presence. So we are not to glory from the things that we accomplish. It's God, really, if we allow him to lead and to guide us, then it is him that the victory belongs to. But of him, verse 30, you are in Christ Jesus, who became for us wisdom from God and righteousness and sanctification and redemption, that as it is written, he who glories, let him glory in the Lord. He who glories, let him glory in the Lord. Now I'm looking to see, I think that's in Jeremiah chapter 9 and verse 23 and 24. Might jot that down. I'm not going to go back there, but I think that's where that is quoted from. Let him who glories, I think what it says there is, let him who glories glory in this, that he knows me. So we are to glory in the Lord and give God the credit. John chapter 15, John 15 and verse 8. John 15 and verse 8. John 15 and verse 8 says, by this my Father is glorified. So again, we read in 1 Corinthians 1, let him who glories glory in the Lord. Here Christ said, by this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit. Again, lessons that we can learn from the children of Israel. That we bear much fruit. So we're to bear fruit. Back to Joshua chapters. We'll read now chapter 7. Joshua chapter 7. The victory requires us, but belongs to God. One of the points here that we read about AI that I wanted to just highlight a little bit. Joshua chapter 7, where we saw a very different approach than we did in Jericho. Chapter 7 says, but the children of Israel committed a trespass regarding the accursed things. For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zebdi, the son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, took the accursed things. So the anger of the Lord burned against the children of Israel. Now Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is beside Beth-Aven, on the east side of Bethel, and took to them, saying, go up and spy out the country. So the men went up and spied out Ai, and they returned to Joshua and said to him, we don't have to send everybody here. You know, just let a few go up. It says, do not let the people go up. Let about 200 or 300 men go up and attack Ai. Do not weary all the people there, for the people of Ai are few. Now, there is no record here. I think we had a sermonette on this. Maybe Mr. Guy gave a sermonette on that some time ago about the fact that there's no record here of God's involvement in this. There's no record here of that at all, that God, that they involved God in it. They just said, okay, you know, kind of almost an arrogant approach here. It says, do not worry. So about 300 men, verse 4, went up there and from the people, but they fled before the men of Ai, and the men of Ai struck down 36. In the overall scheme of things, that doesn't sound like very many, considering that there were thousands. But they chased them from before the gate as far as Shebarim and struck them down on the descent. Therefore, the hearts of the people melted and became like water. Hearts of the people being those of the children of Israel. Then Joshua tore his clothes and fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord, even until evening, and he and the elders of Israel, and they put dust on their heads. So, almost an arrogant attitude here of, you know, we got this, don't worry about it, isn't it? We got this. But in verse 10, we see then that God told Joshua to get up. You know, what does he say in verse 10? He says, so the Lord said to Joshua, get up. Why do you lie thus on your face? Get up and figure this out. And then, he said, Israel has sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them, for they have even taken some of the accursed things and have both stolen and deceived, and they've also put it among their own stuff. So God dealt with this and had to show Joshua, you know, that the victory requires us, but it belongs to God. It's God that we always have to make sure is involved in our lives, don't we? It's God that we always want to make sure has involvement in every aspect, especially the big things, but every aspect of our lives. So, brethren, many lessons to learn from the journey of the children of Israel. Many lessons. Indeed, it was a great and terrible or fearful journey. These lessons and the journey is for our example, isn't it? It's for our example. It's for us to learn from. And we can read through this, and maybe we might challenge us to do that sometime when we read through it. Jot down some of the different lessons that are there for us to learn from. Because as we read in 1 Corinthians, they're written for our example. Not just so that we can point to it, but that we can learn from it and put them to practice in our lives. Joshua chapter 1. Joshua chapter 1 and verse 7. Joshua chapter 1. Certainly another very encouraging lesson that we could learn here. Joshua chapter 1 says, only be strong and very courageous that you may observe to do according to all the law. We're to be doing according to all the law, which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. Brethren, let's take off our shoes, not just use human wisdom. Recognize the victory belongs to God. Verse 9 says, of chapter 1 says, have I not commanded you, be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go.